Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey everyone, Kyle Sconewell here. I hope you're all doing well. Today I wanted to give you a quick little update on a couple of changes here on today's episode and next week's episode, and an update on Robbie. So if you're on the Slack channel, you've probably noticed that Robbie has been a little bit absent the last month or so. And I'll give the ending first here, Michael Scott style. He's okay. As Stanley Hudson would say, why would you phrase it like that? Robbie's okay. I'm not trying to imply anything else. So he has been traveling a ton over the holidays. He went skiing, he visited family, multiple locations, and then had a commitment to go to London for work. So he was just in London for the last couple of weeks as well. He was getting really tired and exhausted, and on his way back from London, he noticed that his arm started hurting. And again, he's going to be okay. But he got back to Austin and his arm was hurting so much, he went to the emergency room. And in the emergency room, they found that he had a blood clot in his arm. They don't know what caused it yet. He's still going to see a hematologist about it. But they had to keep him in the hospital this last week for a while. And he had the option, I guess, to my understanding, of removing it via surgery or taking some blood thinners. They immediately put him on some blood thinners to get his arm working again. The doctor said they're very thankful that it didn't get to his chest and his lung, because I guess that can be very dangerous. So they did stop it, as of now, at his arm. Kind of scary, though, to be honest, a little bit for him, for me, Candace, his family, etc. They got it slowed down. He was discharged from the hospital a few days ago, and he is at home, which is good. He doesn't have a ton of energy because the meds and the way his arm still has so much pressure is hurting. So he's not bedridden, but he is laying down a lot. And so I say that all to say there are going to be a few tweaks on our end for the next couple of weeks while Robbie is on the mend. Thankfully, I think, and he thinks, they've gotten to the bottom of this. Like I said, he's going to see a specialist and figure out what it is. And meanwhile, it's probably a really good forced break for him to just have to slow down a little bit. So a couple of things I wanted to say here at the top. We're just going to flip next week's episode and today's episode while Robbie's on the mend. So instead of announcing the friendly winners today, that will be next week. So you still have time to get some more votes in and check out the ballot on our website. And so instead today, we're going to start our ramp up towards Ant-Man Quantumania. We would have been doing this episode next week, but we have a really fun special interview planned with Al Ewing. He's an incredible high-end comics creator, and he's been working on Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so we thought it'd be appropriate as we ramp up for Ant-Man. More on that in a second. But I just wanted to say, if you could, just for a second, you know, keep Robbie in your thoughts and prayers. I don't think it's anything more serious than just the blood clot. We're hoping it's not. But it is a little bit scary, to be honest. Hopefully it's nothing more than that. And then I just want to take a quick second to say something to you guys out there. For whatever reason in this season, a lot of people my age, a lot of my friends are just going through a lot of stuff. And it's been a tough season for a lot of people. And that may be you out there. I don't know if it's our generation or it's the time of year or if it's just the current phase of our culture, whatever it is, a lot of my friends are struggling right now. And so I just wanted to encourage everyone to take care of yourselves. I mean that sincerely. Whatever that looks like for you, and maybe it's a job, maybe it's family stuff, maybe it's sickness, something causing you stress. I just encourage you to do whatever you can to take care of yourself. We all need rest. We're not machines. And take care of yourself. So back on the podcast front, we've been trying to increase our coverage as we lead up to these films. So one of the things we're adding is chatting with some of these comics creators like Al Ewing today. We also have a twist that Robbie and I are both really excited about on our typical Saga So Far episode. So that will be really fun too. And so with the scheduling change, here's kind of what we're thinking leading up all the way to Ant-Man. Today, January 19, Al Ewing interview. You can hear a little bit of the comics behind the scenes before you watch the movie. Next week, January 26, we will be announcing the winners to the friendlies. So we're just flipping those 2 weeks. And then February 2nd, we have a Saga So Far episode leading up to Ant-Man. Like I said, it's totally different and really fun, really special. And then February 9, we hopefully will have seen Ant-Man by then. So that will be our spoiler-free preview, with February 16 and 17 then being our initial reactions to Ant-Man. And then hopefully in the weeks to follow, we'll do a reflection and hopefully talk to some of the creators and or actors from Ant-Man Quantumania. So again, hope you guys really enjoyed today's episode. Keep Robin your thoughts and prayers. He'll be back next week talking about the Friendly Award winners. I hope you enjoy this conversation from Al Ewing. I now will return you to your regularly scheduled programming here on Friends from Work. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle. But today is extra special because you're going to get a taste of not just Kyle, not just Robbie, but Candace Parker Earle here on the main feed coming over from the Friends from Work Plus Comics Corner. Candace, welcome to Friends from Work.
Coming out of my cage, and I've been doing just fine.
Just fine. I've been doing killer's reference. I got that one. Wow. Let's go. All right. On today's episode of Friends from Work, we are joined by legendary comics creator Al Ewing. Al has been creating comics forever, with some of his most notable works including X-Men Red, Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, and The Immortal Hulk. Al, it's our absolute honor and pleasure to have you on Friends from Work. And so everyone, please give a warm welcome to Al Ewing to Friends from Work.
Yay!
Let's go, Al.
Thank you very much for having me.
Al, so where are you geographically?
I'm in the UK. I'm in the north of England. I'm in Yorkshire.
Okay.
So.
And is that home for you?
No, originally I was from further down south. I was I'm from south of London originally, but I moved here about 20 years ago. Okay. Give or take. A little over 20 years ago, and yeah, it's been home ever since. So,
and would you say that's where you do your best writing at home?
It's where I do my only writing. I can't really I always have trouble getting stuff done when I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. So when I'm, you know, I always kind of bring, I've got a bad habit of bringing work with me to conventions and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's more just like, it's peace, it's quiet. I don't, you know, I don't have any kids. I don't have that many distractions. It's, I don't have to sort of go to, you know, a shed in the back garden or, you know, an office or
right.
something like that to get stuff done. I've always been happier just, you know, working from like a chair in a room.
Totally. So the Comics Corner is the portion of the Friends from Work podcast that Robbie and I host together. Robbie is a longtime comics reader, and I am kind of coming up on my 1 year anniversary of reading comics for the first time. thanks, guys. But
with Al's Loki comic being one of the first that you
right. read. Right. So the way we've done this is we bring in comics that kind of support the viewings of upcoming shows or movies. So naturally, we have landed on your issues of Ant-Man coming up for the February flick.
Yeah, that is, I think that's what, Quantumania, so Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Both of which Wasp more than Ant-Man right now. I've sort of finished up with Ant-Man for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some of your process pieces on the Wasp issues. You know, the Ant-Man miniseries has now been published, but I've seen you kind of going back through and finding all the best costumes from the whole history of the Wasp. And it's been fun to follow.
I've been, I started a newsletter on Ghost recently because, you know, social media is going through a period of upheaval, mm-hmm. let's say. And I kind of wanted to be somewhere in case, you know, some man-child or other should crash the whole thing into a mountain. I'm still at the stage where I've sort of haven't quite integrated it into the thing. So it is still at the moment a kind of weekly whatever's on my mind on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I'd spent a large portion of that day kind of going through the history of the Wasp's various costumes. So I had that on my mind. So I thought, it's a good time to pick my favorites. It's after that, I kind of, Alana Smith, who's editing it, kind of turned up this insane website that somebody's, and, you know, it's one of those, I think it's one of those old GeoCities things. It's sort of, it's good up till the mid-2000s, but it's like this kind of absolute catalogue of literally every single costume, tiny costume variation that the Wasp has ever had. So, you know, it's like, I'm glad I did the work so I could, like, actually pick out a bunch of costumes and not just, you know, land this, but right. Yeah, seriously, that was I did spend like, you know, a good half hour or so just going through all of those, just like trying to find, you know.
And the web address is geocities.com/costume/geocities.com.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's like it's old school web design. It's kind of
I'm obsessed with that. Yeah. I love a deep dive.
Fans of your work know that you are really careful with continuity, both across like your own works and also trying to respect what's going on in the Marvel Universe or just what's gone on before with a particular character. And, you know, that kind of dedication of walking through all these past costumes of the Wasp. I feel like you also get that in going through the four issues of the Ant-Man series you did with Tom Riley. And that's one of the things we're really excited to talk to you about is, you know, what it was like going back through the whole history of a 60-year-old character like Ant-Man that now has not only had so many incarnations in the comics and in video games, but also in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, even they're getting two different variations with a Hank Pym and Scott Lang. So I would love to hear kind of what has been like sifting through all these years of Ant-Man. What you found?
I'm a big fan of what they're doing with Michael Douglas. In that, I kind of think part of the Marvel Universe is sort of the history of it, even back in the 60s, you know, you had Namor turning up, you had Captain America turning up. These were like characters of the past. So it's good that they found a way to kind of retroactively have that element as part of the cinematic universe. In terms of, you know, what it was like going through, you know, the history of Ant-Man, I had a lot of experience because way back, again, this is a 2000s thing, but they used to print, This is before we could get it all on digital, but they used to print. And I think you can still get, they're sort of better quality now, but you can still get these sort of essential collections. I think they're epic collections now, but these big fun books.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, you know, 500 pages of comics at a time.
I had those.
And like back in the day, they were like these black and white, you know, reprints, which was good for kind of getting, you know, getting a look at the art. And I don't know, some of the sort of color reproduction on these archival works, it's, you know, there's debate about how faithful it can be. But like I had one of those for Ant-Man, and it was like the first, you know, 500 pages of Ant-Man stories. And so you got to see, you know, the evolution of the character, this kind of what seemed as a reader like a kind of, and, you know, obviously this was all in the 60s, I wasn't in the room, but like it seems like a kind of editorial desire to like give him something, to try and punch him up a little bit. So like, you know, he starts off, he's almost this kind of Batman type character when he starts off, this sort of camp, you know, slightly camp, kind of like a kind of Caped Crusader thing. You know, it's full of like Chief O'Reilly going, oh, if only Ant-Man could help us now. And like, there's an ant, you know, listening. And which is great. I love that. And like when they give him, when they sort of introduce the Wasp, when they give him a partner, it kind of, it really crackles. In like the first couple of stories, there's a sort of, there's a really weird thing in the first story where like every second thought balloon out of Hank Pym is like, oh, she's very young. She's extremely young. It's like, yeah, stop saying that. It's not going to age well, Hank. But like, you know, once they get into a thing of like, yeah, we're just going to stop mentioning that. And these people are like roughly the same age, except one is kind of like, you know, a stiff scientist who sort of never leaves his lab. And the other is kind of a socialite, a sort of party person. And, you know, and together they fight crime. And it's like, there's a few stories where, you know, Jan drags Hank to a jazz club or something, and it's, and that's the start of a thing. Mm-hmm. Or like, you can really see it's sort of them crackle off each other. And that's probably my favorite period. So that was a big part of, I think it was Darren, the editor of the Ant-Man miniseries, Darren Shan, who originally, I think the kind of, oh, we'd like to do something with like different time periods because there's been so many Ant-Man. That kind of came from him. And I sort of took that ball and kind of ran with it in terms of like, I'd really like to sort of do, rather than just set stories there, try and grab the feel of those periods. And thank goodness I had Tom Riley and Jordi Belair in my corner on that, because they just jumped in with both feet and like really experimenting, not just going back to like, oh, let's do Zipato. Like, Jordi was, you know, Tom, you know, God bless him, just like subsumed himself into like Don Heck for an issue. Mm-hmm. And kind of, you can still see it's Tom, but at the same time, you can see all this Don Heck in the mix.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Jordi, instead of just going back to Zipatone for that, she just thought, okay, how, you know, what about the paper quality? What about the process? You know, how can I kind of,
I noticed that when I was reading.
Yeah.
So it feels a little more collaborative. I was going to ask, do you almost feel like a film director as the writer of the series, kind of, you know?
I mean, it's that I guess I don't really, I'm not so good at kind of those sort of metaphors. I don't know 100% how a director does his job, what a producer does, what a kind of, you know, I know that like the writer's job on a film set is to go away and never return, but like that was very much, you know, we were sort of chatting a lot. Like, I mean, I say that, but mostly my part of that was just like, this all looks amazing, keep doing it.
Yeah.
Keep going.
But like, everybody kind of went in like understanding the brief and wanting to do their best by the brief. And I think that made for like a really, I'm really proud of that series just as a sort of mm-hmm. object in total.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really impressed, especially with the ways, I mean, I finished that first issue that felt so much like you were transported to that kind of 60s era. And then I was so curious to see how each would follow and where you would set them. And as I've kind of read and reread these, I've really loved the second issue and the way that you sort of worked in the secret invasion things that had been going on with Hank Pym, since that was such a big part of that era. And then the way that you even brought back the ant from the Kirkman days, it did feel very immersive. And I'm, you know, I don't know if that was you or Tom or Darren or a collaboration of all, but.
Well, I think Darren did suggest like, I think Darren did send an email mm-hmm. going like, oh, if you're going to do a Kirkman thing, we should remember he had those ant recaps. We should mm-hmm. do one of those. And mm-hmm. I was like, yes, brilliant, immediately. But like with Kirkman, I kind of went back and I said Kirkman, it was Kirkman and Phil Hester. I should make it just, you know, mm-hmm. The writer. But like for that series, I don't know if he did the same on his creator owned. I'd have to go and get my copies of Invincible off the shelf, but like for that series, certainly that Ant-Man series, he worked on like a 16 grid, and everything is subsumed. Even the big double spreads, where like you have this image kind of breaking out of one of the pages and onto the next one, even that is on a 16 grid. If you kind of look at it, and like once you notice it, you can't not notice it. So I was putting in all of these, and you know, Tom didn't like chain himself to that kind of completely. I wrote everything on a 16 grid, and I was like, but there were times when it was just like, no, we're gonna throw in some 16 grids like for flavor to kind of, you know, make sure everybody knows what time period this is, but also, you know, it's we can't stay there forever. But like there was like, so I did a lot of those little four rows of four with like the same picture in them, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of those too. Though it was an era where people were kind of leaning a lot on the kind of the repeated beat,
yeah,
as a timing thing.
I did love it. Felt almost like the Bandersnatch episode of Black Mirror. Whenever I was like reading it, it felt like I had some interaction with, I don't know, the way that you pulled us in and out of the story, where it was like you realized, oh, I'm still in this simulation. I don't know. It brought this level of interest to my experience that I really enjoyed.
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of like an amateur comics historian, and that I do kind of read. I read a lot about this stuff, and it's like, and I do have a love of this, and it's like, it's something I've done in Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of done it a little bit low key in the X-Men books that I've done, is that I sort of notice like writers' ticks, and I've kind of got a couple of my own, but it's, I always enjoy sort of pastiching like classic styles. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm writing a Dread, I'll kind of try and sort of keep it in the tone of a sort of Wagner type
mm-hmm.
type thing. But like with that in particular, I was leaning very heavily on that impulse, in that like I was really trying to imitate, you know, Stan, the cadence of Stan, mm-hmm. or like Larry Lieber.
I totally noticed that. I made a note of it whenever I was reading it. I was like, this feels like the first comics Robbie let me read, or like had us read, was Old School Spider-Man by Stan Lee. And then I saw your writing when I was reading the first issue last night, and I was like, this is, I know exactly what he's up to right now.
I mean, that's a fun one, because, you know, Stan was such a, obviously a character in himself, but like he had such a kind of, like his style kind of became the template for like, you know, people who followed like took it in a more playful direction or a more kind of a more serious direction. But, you know, he sort of, He did kind of set that voice into play that lasted a very long time. But like Kirkman also has a lot of these vocal tics, a lot of these kind of, and it's down sometimes to just like which words he chooses to stress and where, and like when he chooses to repeat. And like I tried to do a thing where like, you know, somebody thinks through like the minutiae of the world they are in, and it's all of this stuff. So it's like, I'm kind of glad that this wasn't just me kind of noodling and nerding out and like doing all of this stuff. Cause sometimes like, I'll do like huge amounts of research on a thing and like put things in, and I know none of it will be noticed. And I kind of hope that it just, like the background radiation of it kind of informs the work and informs the piece, so that when you're reading it, you get on some subconscious level, you get a kind of a vibe of what's going on. So I'm very glad if that's what's happened.
One thing that struck me, I mean, the second issue is literally imposter syndrome. And then in the third issue, you have this conversation between Scott, I think it was Scott, and Cassie, where he's like, man, I just really need to work on my confidence. And those two things together just really struck me from a superhero perspective, and also just like the cultural male perspective, to have someone that's like in this place of superiority just with who he is, but still struggling with that. And I was like, more people need to see characters dealing with this.
I mean, I think it's something in particular of Ant-Man. There's always been this kind of, he's a very human hero in all of his incarnations, in that, you know, obviously Hank kind of, and this is almost baked in right at the start. I mean, I said earlier about those first 500 pages of Ant-Man, and it's like, he keeps kind of going through these changes in order to sort of make him more interesting and kind of make him cooler. And at first that feels to be sort of from the editorial side. And then like, you know, it's sort of baked into the character almost that he's never enough. And that that kind of ends up charting the course of, you know, his entire career on the page. But even with like Eric and Scott, the other Ant-Man, you've got like, you know, they've got problems, they've got issues. Eric is like a horrible person, and you know, his kind of story is that like he tries to be better, and he manages to kind of redeem himself somewhat in small ways, but like then he gets killed, and it's like, yeah, he's just replaced by somebody who's just like in amber, this sort of this frozen version of him as his most dirtbaggy that can kind of never change. And like Scott is sort of, you know, all of Scott's problems kind of seem to revolve around, you know, is he a good enough dad?
Totally.
In all these different metrics. And you know, and this is kind of coming from a place of like, when we first meet him, he's like an ex-con. He's, you know, he's been in prison. He's like trying to rebuild his life. I mean, all of the Marvel heroes are heroes with problems. That's kind of the
right.
That's sort of what the company does. That differentiated them, you know, in the 60s, and you know, the idea of an ongoing relatable problem more than just like Superman, you know, I've got a secret identity. Well, that I need to maintain that. That's where most of the and you know, all Superman's problems are kind of like solved in an issue, you know.
Right.
Spider-Man's like rent problem is not solved in an issue, you know. Ant-Man's Ant-Man's problems with and you know, over time, you know, I remember when I was a kid, you had, you know, DC had fully adopted this. It was like Superman Worlds of Soap Opera. It was like Days of Our Lives. You know, you'd pick it up every week, and it'd be like the Triangle Numbers, and it'd be like this week, you know, it's 10 pages of Superman fighting somebody. It's 10 pages of Jimmy Olsen has been evicted. It's like, you know, Lois Lane has broken up with Clark again. And it was brilliant because that was what people wanted to read. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started, you know, you can see with Ant-Man sort of, you know, you can see them kind of growing that. It's Peter Parker especially, but I think Ant-Man is sort of, the various iterations of Ant-Man mm-hmm. are like, mm-hmm. for a lot of people, that is, you know, that is the relatable problem. That is, you know, it's like not being confident in yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and having problems, having kind of like, you know, maybe problems or conditions or things about yourself that you have to, you know, you have to maintain. It's, you know, that is for a lot of people. That is like, yeah, I see myself in that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's something Ant-Man does very well.
One of my favorite things, Kyle, you were going to love this. in the second issue, I love the Lost reference that you wrote into.
Let's go. Let's go, Al.
Because this issue is taking place in the year 2006.
Right. So he's like, what happens?
Because it was like in, you know, in the first issue, like Jen references like Francis Truffaut, and like there's, I feel like there's something else, but it was like, mm-hmm. I think like the cars are in the period, the kind of the popcorn thing. Mm-hmm. I was like sending Tom reference of like, this is roughly what, you know, a cinema lobby would look like in 1960, like mm-hmm. 1962, whenever mm-hmm. this issue takes place. The film is, you know, that's slightly out of whack because I was looking for like, obviously, you know, I've only got so many hours in my day to like do this kind of noodling, but it's like, are there any thing? And the only, like, Hollywood at the time was this sort of mysterious zone where occasionally you'd like meet a wacky director, you know, when Stanley wanted to do a Hollywood joke. Because obviously this has to take place before Hank becomes Giant Man, and it has to be like post Trago, so there's quite a thin uh-huh. window. I think in that time it was like the only on the page fictional to Marvel, like Marvel movie, was that thing where the Fantastic Four tricks the FF into like fighting him, and then, you know, they beat him and the Submariner's like, okay, uh-huh. well, I'm gonna put out the movie and it's gonna make $1 billion and you're gonna be rich again.
I love that issue.
It's like this is like canonically the seat of the Fantastic Four's fortune, this terrible film that Submariner made that everyone like went to see out of curiosity, and it made them $1 billion. But like, you know, in this unheard of Hollywood deal, I would love to, you know, Mr. Fantastic using all of his brain power to get the contract. So like, you know, he's right. actually paid for this. So, you know, in the first issue, that's the film they go to see. And mm-hmm. it's like the,
or whenever they're like, is now a good time to buy a house? And it's like the 08
oh, right.
housing crisis is like imminent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, like, issue 3 was where we just got to relax, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. we don't have to do any of this stuff. It was happening like right now. We could just do a Marvel comic. So I feel like that was the sort of break issue for everybody, and everybody could just, you know, tell mm-hmm. a story. And I know Tom appreciated, like, after being, you know, Don Heck and Phil Hester for a couple of issues, he got to be himself, and that was great. Mm-hmm. And then, like, issue 4 was just like, oh, my God, what a comic's going to look like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly gags about, like, you know, they're really going to hold your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really going to, like, they're going to walk you through it. It's like when you play video games now. The instructions pop up on the screen.
Yep.
Yeah. As you go, I play a lot of Hitman, and like, that's very, it's very noticeable in Hitman, in Metal Gear Solid 5, which is in both these games that I've played a lot of. I went back and tried playing some of the old Metal Gear Solids, and it's just like, what are the controls? You know,
I need the hand holding, actually.
I need to interject here and find out what other video games really quickly are you playing? Just really quick.
Oh, it's all hit. Hitman's kind of my one game. Okay. Aside from that,
did you Red Dead?
I did Red Dead. I played, I nearly 100%ed that, but like,
wow.
Some of those like carvings at the end, I just sort of fell off. I should get into it and just, I might have actually 100%ed it and forgot.
Okay.
But like, I have a memory of just like putting it down halfway through the carvings. No, I'll tell you what, it's the flowers. It's picking up all the flowers and finding all of the fine animals. It's just I stopped.
God, the problem with Red Dead to me though is that you have to, that horse takes a while to get to each like mission.
Yeah,
it just took much time.
I just kept the same horse throughout. I feel like most people that horse you get that's pretty good that you get as like a reward for a mission.
But then when it dies, it's
it's extremely. You get a special cutscene, I think, if you kept it the whole time.
It's the worst.
Oh, wow.
But the trouble is, you can just, like, you know, spoilers for, like, after the horse dies, but you can just get the same horse again, like, in the future. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is the horse's twin brother.
I had this awful moment where my horse was dying and it needed medicine, but then every time I'd walk away, I was nervous it would like disappear off the screen. I didn't know what to do. I'm like going this way, like, I don't have medicine.
Then I always kept a bottle of horse reviver on me, just, you know, in case I headbutted a train or something.
That's what, like, I needed.
Yeah.
You were talking about the third issue in the Ant-Man Mini, and kind of, I was struck by, and Candace sort of pointed this out, there are certain similarities, I thought, between the way that you wrote the Scott Lang character and I think the way that Paul Rudd's version of that character has progressed. And now, obviously, it is, you know, the film version is based on the Scott Lang comic character. But I'm always curious, you know, as you're delving into both like the history of these characters, but also just, like we said, all their different iterations. Even if you're not consciously doing it, do you find that like the film interpretations, for instance, of Ant-Man start to kind of seep in on some level?
I mean, I think they can do. I tend to see the sort of the films as like a resource we can tap into, in that it's obviously the version of the character that most people know. Mm. And sometimes you take that, sometimes you leave it. I feel like with, you know, Paul Rudd, you know, wonderful actor, very charming. It's a great kind of, I feel like I take more from like previous kind of iterations, because I went back and sort of had a look at the last couple of Ant-Man series, and you know, they're very kind of comedic. They're very much in that style, in that sort of, you know, Paul Rudd, the sort of lovable like loser character. But I also sort of went back and looked at him under Matt Fraction, where he's like a grieving father, and he's sort of this very like, it's a funny book, but Scott Lang is almost the straight man in it. It's like, he's almost the most serious character in there. And that fascinated me, that like, you know, it's like Grant Morrison doing Batman, you know, the same character as all of these people. And it's like, so I did want to do a thing where like, yeah, it's the sort of goofy, you know, oh, he's having trouble. He's like, nobody respects him. He's kind of got this thing. But there's this like core of like, oh yeah, also I killed a guy. And it's, you know, oh, did I mention I killed a guy in prison? Because I don't talk about that ever. It's almost like a shield, like almost the sort of goofy kind of, the goofy sort of like, oh, what wacky situation have I gotten myself into now? It's almost a way to kind of keep people at arm's length slightly, to sort of keep people away. You know, and his daughter obviously sees through it. And it's like, I really enjoy kind of when I can sort of take the various iterations of the character and make them into one person.
Yeah.
I feel like if I manage to do that, that's like, I have done my job that day. It's like, you know, that is kind of what I'm hired to do, is sort of, you know, continue this like ongoing narrative that's like, you know, I've got 80 years old at this point, mm-hmm. and kind of make it ongoing, make it a continuation. I think that's really what separates. I mean, I talk a lot of smack about DC. It's like what separate. I love DC. Mm-hmm. You know, I love theirs. I was always a Marvel guy. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I feel like part of that is that I came into DC right after Crisis on Infinite Earths. And there was like, it was tailor-made for me. It was like, yay, I get to go in on the ground floor of all of these characters who I've only heard of. You know, Superman, yeah, wow, it's his origin. Wow, it's John Byrne, brilliant. But then they did it again, and they did it again, and they did it again. And I remember when Zurak came along, and it was like, wait, okay, I'm starting to lose track now. And then like the latest one, it was like the new 52 was like, okay, I'm on the ground floor of this, but like I kind of miss what was before. And you know, Morrison was right in the middle of his Batman story, and like he just done a really good issue, and now it's like, okay, did that happen or not? And now they're doing it again, and it's like, okay, I'm lost. I'm sort of, I'm picking up, I'm reading DC mm-hmm. Comics and they're great, but they're like, I'm picking up these minis. Everything is an Elseworld. Right. I'm picking up all of these like 12 issue minis, and it's like, hey, wow, this is great. This is, you know, I just picked up the first issue of Danger Street, and it's like, does this happen in continuity? Doesn't it? That's not a question I ask myself anymore. And I kind of feel like that's something almost lost. But because it's the same one, I'm also reading Chip's Batman, which is brilliant. Everyone should pick that up. Sorry to say that on a Marvel podcast.
No, we're big.
It's an unofficial Marvel podcast.
Yeah, big Chip Zdarsky. Yeah,
okay.
Fans.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I didn't know whether it was official.
We love Chip Zdarsky in this house. I mean, for me personally, it's Sex Criminals. But
yeah, Chip is wonderful. But like, I picked that up, and it's the same. There's no switch in my head that flips between that and Danger Street or Human Target. It's like, okay, this is a single item, you know, a sort of closed off universe that's like based on characters I know. And I mean, the difference being that Chip's feels sort of more quote unquote official. But I don't really know anymore. Whereas with Marvel, it's like I can say with absolute certainty that, like, if you see Janet Van Dyne right now in the new Wasp number one, that is exactly the same person who was in Tales of Astonish 144. It's like, no, 44, whatever. That's the same person. That's the same character. Yeah, you know, we've tweaked a little bit. We've sort of, the sliding timeline has happened, but like, you know, it's the same. And I think that's important. I think that's something that's worth keeping around. I'm not in agreement with the people who think that Marvel should be rebooted. Because a couple of people do think that, but I think that would be a mistake, because if you do it once, when does it stop?
Right.
It's like, it was a great idea when DC did it, but then, you know, it's like you have opened that door. You have, you know, you've taken the plastic cover off that button and you've pressed it, and now what's to stop you doing it again? Evidently not.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's one of the things I always thought was so effective about the Ultimate Universe with Marvel is I felt it gave, I mean, some of those comics are some of my favorites. Ultimate Spider-Man is still, particularly the first 100 issues or so, one of my favorite modern Marvel comics. So I felt it gave them the chance to kind of reinvent some characters and bring people in without having to undo, you know, the decades of 616 Peter Parker stories.
I mean, those were some great comics. Ultimate X-Men really excited me at the time. There was an energy there that really captured me. But like, new X-Men was going on at the same time.
Right.
You know, I was really into that as well. But like, if the Ultimate Universe had replaced the 616 and then run out of steam as it did, so it's kind of, it's almost in hibernation now, and it's like, you know, people still think about it and obviously a couple of characters, you know, the Plum characters migrated over. You know, we have Miles Morales now. And the Maker, and I think that's it. And, you know, a few ancillary, like, supporting cast. Yeah, basically it was like, you know, we kind of picked the very Plums out of the basket and the rest of it is just in storage. But, like, if that had happened and then there was no 616 to go back to, you know, it would be like, yeah, Flashpoint, you know, like, or whatever, you know, Zero, like, we need to do another of these. And then you end up in that. You end up in the loop. You end up never being able to stop.
Right.
If DC were to say now, okay, this time for real, this one, you know, this new crisis that we're doing, that is it. We're never doing another one of these. I would have serious trouble believing them. Because, you know, they've said that before too.
I want to get you out of here, Al, on a very zoomed out question for our audience out there that doesn't read a lot of comics. First of all, how did you get into comics? Like, what drew you to comics in general? And then what would be your elevator pitch to someone who doesn't read comics on why they would enjoy it?
Right. Well, I got into comics because when I was growing up, they were still a cultural thing. I was born in, you know, 1977 in the UK. The weekly comic, we had things like the Beano, the Dandy. There were, I read something called Buster. There were these like kind of anthology magazines. The closest thing would probably be like Mad Magazine, but like we're talking like one page strips, very much on the formula of like a kid like you, but with a gimmick, gets into a quote unquote comedic, sometimes funny, sometimes not, adventure, you know. It's like you can pick up a copy of the Beano today and pretty much get the idea. But so I'd read one of those, and like the general thing was that, you know, every kid was expected to read a comic at the time. It was just a thing. I think, you know, kids like sweets, kids like comics, kids ride bikes, you know. Every kid, like literally every kid. It wasn't just like there was a separation, as with everything, there was a separation by gender in that there were girls' comics and boys' comics, and the girls' comics were more sort of soap opera influenced, whereas the boys' comics were like sort of adventure, quote-unquote adventure comics, in that, you know, you sort of graduate from the one-page strips to like three-page strips, four-page strips, five-page strips, which are like episodes of a dramatic story. So I kind of graduated to 2000 AD, which was the sci-fi comic that was like winning all the, you know, I didn't know that it was just the good comic. You know, you could also pick up a copy of Battle, but why would you? 2000 AD was there. So it's like, it was the one that was winning all the awards and taking all the artistic risks and giving credit to like, it was the first to do credits for artists and writers and letterers. That was Kevin O'Neill, who tragically passed away recently. But that was his doing. And, you know, 2000 AD was the comic that Kevin O'Neill was in, because obviously he was banned in America as being completely unsuitable for children. But like, so that's kind of how I got into comics, was just like, it was expected of me. And like what changed was that I continued to be into comics because they fascinate me as a medium, the combination of the words and the pictures. And also the fictional histories, the fictional universes are like, fascinating things to me on just this level that's like an artistic level. I was never a big sort of, you know, statistics nerd or a sort of, you know, I could have gone that route. There was in the 80s a lot of routes were open at the time, in that you had a lot of comics. The big computer game boom was happening, and on machines that like always had a keyboard, so you could program them yourself. But it was comics that really kind of caught my attention. And like, so, you know, when I was sort of expected by society to like give them up as a kid's thing, I was just like, no, there's like, you know, there's Dan Clowes, there's Peter Begg, there's Alan Moore, there's all of this stuff. I can, you know, it's a medium, I can keep going. And that's kind of what I would say to people who are not into comics now, mm-hmm. and as a means of getting them into comics, is that it's not a hobby. It's right. not like it's a medium. It's like film, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy watching the telly? Do you enjoy reading a book? It's like, it's a medium, and...
And it's not your phone.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, it can be your phone. You know,
it can be, but...
You can read it on a tablet. It's like, I feel like superheroes are kind of, for whatever reason, they're the most accessible form of this thing. I'd have to get into the psychology of where that is. But, like, for whatever reason, they're the most easily found and, I guess, the most easily accessed. They're a genre that's evidently given... what the current highest grossing movies are right now, evidently a very exciting genre. They're probably quite a complicated way to kind of get into comics, but like if you picked up like Rainer Tengelmeyer, if you picked up one of those, that's, you know, that's more comics than Marvel is. It's certainly doing bigger numbers. It's like, right. That's probably what most people think of when they think of it. So, like, you know, if you turn to the newspaper and, like, I don't know, like, Doonesbury is there, that's comics. That's that is also comics. It's like there are different gradations of the same thing, but it's like it's all this word picture format that, like, we've kind of like got into a reasonably perfected form.
Yeah.
Right. I think what's so cool is whenever I, and this is, again, new to comics, whenever I'm watching the movie and I can see a shot that is verbatim something from what I've read, that connective tissue is what motivates me. That's what I would encourage people to pick up a comic for. It's just, it's fun.
I mean, that's certainly a way to get people into them. If, like, you know, if I'm sure if you're like, you're reading, I know when I'm sort of watching a film and like, there's a particular line that I know in the Superman line, in the Superman film that Snyder did, there was like, there was one particular line from Morrison that kind of leapt out to me from the trailer, which like, you know, kind of got me into the cinema to see it. Cause it's like, it's almost like a kind of guarantee that like, oh, we understand. Which, you know, maybe in that case not so much, but like there is this connective tissue. I kind of feel like they're fascinating. It's just such a fascinating medium. Just like the kind of, and it's so accessible because it's everywhere. Like, you know, it's in your daily paper. It's sort of, you know, it's on the web. It's like you can access it through this quite, I guess, a collector's format where, because, you know, the 20-page floppy is, it's what we've arrived at and what we've remained at through various like decisions and misadventures. It's not the natural form of comics, and it's sort of geared towards a particular market. It's geared towards a kind of collecting market. But a lot of people collect things. A lot of people follow soap operas. This could be a thing that, you know, you also get into that aspect as well. And, you know, that wouldn't be an invalid thing to. I wouldn't say, you know, oh, you're doing comics wrong. You know, I'd never say that about any form of comics. But, like, you know, it could be that this hypothetical person who, quote-unquote, doesn't read comics, you may only read – I mean, you've been on a plane. You've looked at the safety information. You may only read, like
– Yeah, well.
You may only – it may be that the only comics you don't read are the ones that, you know, cost $4 and you get 20 pages and it's part, you know, 287 of 5 billion. And, like, that's perfectly understandable, but, like, there are ways in even to that, and you can find some really fun stories there.
Absolutely.
I think that I have found it's such a, this sounds cheesy, but it's such a pure medium in certain ways, and that it's just a handful of creators. And obviously you have editorial and you have the greater direction of the publishing company. But, you know, even looking at something like Immortal Hulk, as it's so different from what was going on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the Hulk character, but also different from what was going on in the Marvel Comics universe with other characters. Like it was just, it's this thing that you can pick up that feels like a largely self-contained, but also really, really bold reinvention of this mythos. And so I think it's, to me, as much as I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe and film in general and those franchises, I'm excited by how like seemingly boundless the opportunities are within a comic. Like how I really have no idea where what I'm going to pick up is going to go. And that's really exciting because on some level you just by the nature of the beast, that's not something that an entry into like the MCU can do, you know, cause there are a lot of kind of competing interests. And so I've found myself pitching like, you know, Immortal Hulk, and I would love to have you back on soon and we could just talk for an hour about that. But you know, that like X-Men Red 5, I think is my favorite event tie-in issue ever, you know, kind of talking about taking something that can be opaque and making it, not only accessible, but exciting and different. And so I think you're such a great example of a creator that really utilizes the unique kind of a medium that comics presents.
Oh, thank you very much. That's high praise. Yeah, I'm glad I'm putting out work that people enjoy reading.
Well, we certainly enjoy reading it, and we've enjoyed having you on the show. And like I said, hopefully we can have you back on to noodle about all of the great work that you've done and are doing. Before we do, is there anything that you're working on right now, either on the Marvel side or creator owned, that you want to kind of highlight for folks?
After Christmas, the week after Christmas, the final episode of We Only Find Them When Their Dead comes out. And that'll be the end of the story. And then it'll likely be collected. Obviously, the third book will be collected. I'd have thought it would be collected in hopefully an omnibus format. I'll have to talk about that. But certainly, there'll be the final trade of that. X-Men Red is ongoing. That's transitioning for 3 months into Sins of Sinister. I would recommend for the tie-in shy, you know, the crossover shy among us, that's one I would recommend. We've put a lot of work into it, and there are elements of that are going to echo back into the main book. There's a reason we're sort of treating it as, it's like a little hiatus from the ongoing series, but it's taking their place. There's kind of a reason for that. It's because, you know, Storm and the Brotherhood 1, 2, and 3, if you think of them as like the X-Men Red issues, you know, for that month, that's like, you wouldn't be 100% wrong there. It's, you know, it's certainly okay. Something that'll echo. So you know, if... That might be something that you're kind of, aside from that, you know, I've got the, next year there's the Wasp mini coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There are big announcements down the pipe, like seismically huge announcements coming. They're not here yet, so I can't talk about any of that.
Teaser.
But like, yeah, you know, keep an eye out.
Under NDA, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Al, we're such big fans of yours. Thanks for being so generous with your time. You're an absolute legend. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thanks so much. Hopefully not the last. Thank you for coming to our Comics Corner.
Yeah, you're the best.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So.
What an absolute treat.
Guys, I mean, what did you think? What did you think of my main feed debut?
Wow. That's what I was going to say. Wow. Not just Al Ewing, but also Candace Parker Earle on the same episode.
She's coming for us.
We really started our guest series for the Comics Corner with top tier. I don't know how we didn't really go. I mean, there's so many incredible creators, but for us to have Al Ewing on as the first, what the heck?
Man, what a nice guy. It's so funny because for folks that are familiar with his writing, I mean, he writes really kind of like heady sci-fi stuff. And sometimes he writes a lot of horror comics. And so you just never know what it's going to be like to talk to someone. It's like imagining having like Stephen King on something where I'm like, what is it going to be like to have a conversation with the person whose brain creates these horrifying things?
That's like Ari Aster. Like he did, Midsummer and Hereditary, and everyone's like, he's the coolest, nicest guy. And I'm like, what is in your brain that makes you come up with this? Like, how are you compartmentalizing this freaky stuff that you put out on screen?
Well, my big takeaway was, he's a big horse guy in Red Dead. Let's go, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Very
How
horse
do you
focused.
Get to 100% on Red Dead? That is
so impressed.
That's impressive. That means he like shaved his beard every morning in the game and like everything. I mean,
he can do everything. Picking the flowers? Is that what you're saying? Like broke him finally?
There's little sheds where you can go play actual poker.
I've done that before, apparently.
Mm-hmm. He's done it all.
Man.
I'm really bad at shooting, and so usually when Robbie and I are playing, like, I'm doing the horse stuff and, like, the day-to-day, and then we get to some bad guys, and I, like, throw it to Robbie.
You do it.
I do, man, it was so fun to hear him talk about what makes Ant-Man Ant-Man. You know, like, I love getting to have those conversations.
Sure.
And, you know, before No Way Home, we kind of had a similar conversation with Danny Gavazdin, who hosts the Amazing Spider Talk podcast. And I would say Dan's one of these guys that's read every issue of Amazing Spider-Man ever multiple times and has consulted on the films and knows it really well. But, you know, then to have Al Ewing come in, who's gone through this process that we talked about. And like I said, like I follow him. He's doing these deep dives into like, I called out the costumes for the Wasp just because they were working on a variant cover that showed all of them. But obviously, like, you know, and I would encourage anyone listening to this, please go pick up his Ant-Man. And by the time this comes out, the first issue of the Wasp may be available as well. But they're so fun. They're like, especially for people that have never read comics, like we were talking about, they're totally self-contained. I mean, it's like if you know the history, there are a ton of fun Easter eggs, but like Candace doesn't know any of the Ant-Man comics history really. And, you know, enjoyed reading them. So it's such a
And it took me like an hour. Thing. It's a very quick read. And it was honestly my first interaction with his writing. And I don't know, low commitment if you want to fill in the gaps before listening to this. It's a good way to kind of understand the interview a bit more.
Well, thanks to Al Ewing, thanks to Candace. If you are into this kind of thing, go check out Friends from Work Plus. Now's maybe a good time. This is what we kind of got going on over there, the Comics Corner featuring these two. So a lot more of this kind of talk.
Well, and we've said it, but now is actually the perfect time to say, because we're getting it going here at the start of the year. For people that are curious and seeing kind of what comics have to offer, we are starting our walk through the Jonathan Hickman Avengers series that culminate in Secret Wars. And I think, you know, depending on how the studio shifts or doesn't shift the final release date for Secret Wars, I think it's going to wind up being timed pretty perfectly so that we will kind of be wrapping up the Secret Wars event as we're gearing up for the Secret Wars movie. So this is one of those series that, like Ewing, Hickman is a big thinker and loves kind of delving into things, but at the same time likes to make his work feel standalone. So it's a really good way for you to jump on with us and kind of walk through and figure out what this medium looks like without having to do like a ton of homework beforehand. So I that's my pitch right now for the Comics Corner, because I'm been working on this this reading list, and I've been very, very excited for this particular journey, and would love to have you join.
And not Absolutely. Only that, I find this whole thing we're about to jump into incredibly intimidating, just because there's so much to it. But I know it's really important for what's going on in the MCU moving forward. So if that still is like kind of intense for you, just know there's going to be a lot of handholding, and in a way that's like not pandering, but very safe and welcoming. So
there you go.
Love that.
That's the tagline for the Comics Corner.
There you go.
Not pandering.
Print it.
Safe and welcoming.
Safe and welcoming.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for having me on the video part. And
Let's go.
Let's do it again.
Thank you, everyone out there, for listening. Don't forget to like, review, subscribe, follow, and we'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.